Hello, friends. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today, we're joined by John Burkhart of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Mr. Burkhart was born in Denver. He went to high school at Regis Jesuit. He got a bachelor's from Miami, University of Ohio in marketing, of all things. Then he decided to go teach in Namibia. And then came back to the Bronx to teach there, where he taught biology. He picked up a master's at the New School for Social Research in New York in international affairs, then went down and worked in the Orleans Public Defender's Office. Currently, he is with the Southern Poverty Law Center. He's field director for criminal justice reform and is a leader of an organization that's been influential in recent within the last year or two, Louisianans for Prison Alternatives. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're working with Louisianans for Prison Alternatives on reforming prisons and incarceration in Louisiana. Just for the sake of our listeners who may not be as informed as they maybe should be on this issue, does Louisiana have an incarceration problem?
Yes, it does. Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate per capita of any jurisdiction in the entire world.
The world. So not the United States, the world.
Including the United States, but yes, we top the world. More than North Korea, more than Iran, more than China, more than any other nation, any other state, Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate in the world.
Yeah, but aren't we the nation of the free, the home of the brave? How did we end up on top of this heap?
It's you know, not necessarily orchestrated, but it's been a long time coming, and especially over the past certainly over the past half century, a number of policies, a lot of fear has driven us to this point, and we really are at a point where there's no choice but to start, getting away from this and finding some better, smarter approaches to how we solve our public safety problems.
Better, smarter approaches, and that's what Louisianans for Prison Alternatives is kind of all about. Is that right?
That's right. We are dedicated to lowering Louisiana's incarceration rate and lowering the collateral consequences that people face. We want to explore more opportunities for people that don't involve living in a cell, and for people that are released from prison, we want them to have more opportunities to ameliorate their behavior or find new ways forward that are productive for them and better for our society.
When you talk about the arrest record or people who are in prison, it's not just those people who are in prison, right? I recently read a statistic that said one in as many as 1 in 10 African American children have a parent or caregiver type person in prison or tied up in criminal justice issues. Is that true? Does that figure sound right?
I don't think it's far off. I don't have the figure off the top of my head, but that's one of the main points is that if you look at this in a very isolated way, you look at someone commits a crime and there's a punishment for them. That's throwing them into prison. But what you do when you do that is that you do remove in many places a caretaker, someone who's someone who might be the primary breadwinner for their household, certainly someone who is an influence in the family. And then what happens to that community? Someone's being raised without a father or a mother. What happens when that is multiplied across, several different households within a neighborhood? And that's why you see, so many problems happening within neighborhoods, within communities. And it's the ramifications extend far beyond just the one person who's sent to prison.
So if we think about, I guess most people think about getting sent to prison, they're like, so and so went out and did something they shouldn't have done. They were caught, they were apprehended, they got sent to prison. They're getting their condign punishment, so to speak. But in fact, there's kind of this web of people who are affected by that. So it kind of takes that person in isolation. Yeah, that's that. But then there's the family. There are the people that are related to them. There's the job. There's the participation in society. And there are all those other kinds of things to think about, and that affects a lot of people. Probably everybody knows somebody, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It happens all over. And, it's one of those things where when you look at it, some people do need time out. There are some crimes where people need to be removed from society. Some people need to be removed for a longer period of time. But we just have this one-size-fits-all approach to it because there are a lot of people who have mental health problems. There might be substance abuse problems. A lot can be caused by poverty. And the solution to it isn't always to throw them into a prison cell, especially when the conditions that we have across the facilities in the state are not necessarily conducive to rehabilitation. So then, you know, over 95% of people that get sent to prison are going to end up returning to our communities. So when they do, don't we want them to be rehabilitated? Don't we want them to have a new orientation? And also, let's not forget that Louisiana has a very high rate of wrongful convictions. So it's not like everyone we send there is necessarily guilty in the first place.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit. Does Louisiana have more criminals than other places? I mean, we seem to have by far the highest incarceration rate. In fact, I think we're close to 100 people per 100,000 higher than the next highest state. So are we just a criminal state? What's going on here?
Actually, no. Our crime rate is if you look at Louisiana compared to our neighboring states, and we're not comparing ourselves to Connecticut or Alaska or anything like that. But looking at Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, our crime rate is very, very similar. One major distinction that we have is that we send, compared to Georgia, we send twice the number of nonviolent people convicted of nonviolent offenses. We send them to prison at double the rate of Georgia and three times the rate as Florida. We just extend the people that we throw behind prison for nonviolent offenses just very far. We use it in places that a lot of our neighboring states don't.
What would be an example? Now, you've been, I think, a public defender, right? You know, so what's an example of a nonviolent offense that would put somebody in jail?
Yeah, I think the broad categories of property and drug crimes.
Okay, property. Now, property would be theft of various kinds. Breaking and entering be part of that?
I believe so. I worked at the public defenders, but it was as a campaign manager, so I'm not versed in the criminal code.
Okay.
To at least eliminate that. But yeah, these are ones that don't, a lot of drug, a lot of property, damage to property, some sort of trespassing, which can be also sleeping under a bridge. It's a very far and wide ranging, group of statutes.
So there are a number of people. So the reason why Louisiana's criminal justice system is more robust than other states perhaps has something to do with sentencing people who are not convicted of violent crimes but other kinds of crimes to prison, right, or to jail or something. Part of this has to do with poverty. What's the connection with poverty?
Well, it's not just one linkage with that. It's across the board. I mean, some people just don't receive a good education. They don't have they're never given any opportunities, and the life of the streets is the only opportunity that's provided for them. Some people grow up in poverty and they don't have their mental health or they witness something as children that creates some trauma. Especially in a state like this where you had, Katrina early on. So
we just recently did a show on aggravated childhood experience or ACE. So.
Yeah. So, a lot of people who grow up in poverty, it's untreated. They might commit smaller acts of crime. And what I think one of the biggest distinctions is that if you don't have any an alternative intervention early on. So if somebody commits something that's we're not talking about a violent crime, but we're talking about some transgression where there's really no victim. But if they're 18 or 19 years old, they commit that. If there is some sort of intervention that doesn't send them to prison, but is actually something that helps them, springboards them into a more productive path, then we're not going to see this person just go in and out of our criminal justice system. If you throw them into prison at 18, 19, especially into our juvenile system, then we're almost conditioning them to expect to go to prison because you just took them away at prime education, prime working years. They have a criminal record. And then when they get out 2-3 years later, what are they going to do with that? Having missed out on education, having missed out on a work history, and then there is the scarlet letter of having served time. So we essentially just took someone and And we created someone with the lack of potential to you know, turn towards a better path.
So once you're swept up in the criminal justice system, things can get tough, right? The poverty connection that I know about or that I've thought about is that many people, they said, there's some recent studies that said about 40% of Americans couldn't lay their hands on $400 at a moment's notice if they needed to. So they just don't have those kind of resources. They don't have a credit card. They don't have a family member who can front them that money. So then if you do get swept up in a criminal justice system and you get a fine, we have a bail system here in Louisiana. I know some states don't have bail systems, right? As I understand that basically, or the system that we use. So they basically release most of the people that we hang on to on their own recognizance with the admonition that they need to show up for their court date.
And I think I don't think it's quite as ideal in other places as we would. And I know we like to say that Louisiana is doing it so much worse than everyone else. We do in bail, but it's also not exactly. I'm still looking for that perfect jurisdiction in other places. But you also do raise a good point about, you know, when we do talk about poverty and like a lot of it, this could be parking tickets. These could be speeding tickets. So it's not like, it's not like someone's out there like really with a menacing mindset and doing things. But it is. You get a ticket that you can't afford, and then you miss a court date, and then the whole thing goes haywire. So it's
then you've got a warrant, and then you perhaps get a summons. You don't obey the summons, then you're on parole, then you violate parole.
Yeah,
I saw a statistic recently that said that something like 2/3 of the people who are returning to prison have to do with violating parole in some form or another, not with new crimes.
Yeah, 60% of people in Louisiana that are sent to prison are, that's for revocation. So they did not comply with, some part of their parole or probation supervision agreement. And so that's something where, these could be, in many places, these are technical violations. So this isn't, necessarily a new crime or anything really terrible that happened, but when you see that many number of people returning to prisons that were under supervision, then I think that tells us that a lot of our supervision might be structured in a way to let people fail. Because I remember back in my teaching days that, if one student failed the test, then I knew that student didn't study, they weren't prepared. If the entire, if half the class or more than half the class failed, then that was on me as a teacher, because that wasn't set up right. So I think that we can look at, it's not one thing, it's not one person, but it is, I think, our structure for how we supervise people when they get out, that we need to be doing something more to incentivize the right steps than to try to bring them back into the web.
Yeah, ultimately, we spend a lot of money on this and in this state, and we have other pressing needs. But I guess the question that I would say with regard to our prison population is, are we safer, for locking up all these people? I mean, it sounds like, so you have, 2/3 of our criminal justice system constantly clogged up with nonviolent property, drug, mental illness-related things. Does that really make us safer to lock all those people up?
Yeah, it would definitely be one thing if we have the highest incarceration rate in the world and we're also the safest. But as it is, I think I saw a statistic recently where I think Monroe was rated as the most dangerous, or they had the highest crime rate of any city above a certain population size.
In the United States?
In the United States.
Wow.
And I think that if you look at that list, there's three Louisiana cities that are in the top 10. And so this entire criminal justice system that we've had, this is several decades in the making, and we are actually incarcerating more people to increase the risks of our public safety. We're not any safer for doing this. We're actually it's a more dangerous situation out there because of how many people we incarcerate.
Crazy. We are talking today to John Burkhart, who is with the Southern Poverty Law Center. He's state director for criminal justice reform. We're going to talk some more when we come back.
The strongest voices in the community, business, and government are those of KRVS listeners. Want to be heard? Get your message out by becoming a KRVS program sponsor. Call 337-482-1437.
I love short fiction. Short fiction is like close-up magic. This is Neil Gaiman. Get your story fixed this week on Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
6 p.m. Friday on KRVS.
Hello and welcome back to Bayou de Beltway. I'm Pearson Cross. Today we're talking to John Burkhart from Southern Poverty Law Center, working for prison reform in Louisiana. It may be a bit beside the point, but you know, we lead the nation in number of people incarcerated in terms, proportionally speaking, of course. How much does this all cost us budget-wise? And just out of curiosity.
Well, the line item on the budget is about $700 million a year. For our Department of Corrections. You can do a much deeper dive, which I did one time, into the other costs. You know, so district attorneys receive salaries, public defenders do. We spend money on sheriffs and police departments. And overall, that's actually more than $2 billion wow. a year. And that's, you know, state, local funding. But
and federal, too.
Some federal, certainly. But DOC, that cost is $700 million a year.
$700 million. So to put that in perspective, TOPS is about $300 million. So we spend $300 million trying to make sure that, you know, kids who do well in school can go to college, but we spend over twice that at least on incarcerating people. Now, you've introduced – your organization's introduced some legislation. Some of it was successful last session. Tell us a bit about that and then perhaps move on to what you intend to do, if you would.
Sure. Well, last year we were actually one stakeholder among several others that were part of the Justice Reinvestment Task Force process. We did not have a seat on the task force, but we were there to go out into the communities, go out into, you know, affected communities, reach out to people all over the state and get them involved in the process, keep them aware of the data that was being generated by this, and then also keep them aware of when important committee hearings were being held, when, you know, bills were being considered by the Senate or the House. And, you know, this is really the product of Governor Edwards and, you know, the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, you know, district attorneys, public defenders, judges, sheriffs. Everyone was a part of this and they produced recommendations. And all 10 bills, the resulting 10 bills, they all passed.
That's pretty unusual, right?
It's pretty unusual. I do like to think of someone sitting, you know, listening to the radio in Minnesota and hearing about how Louisiana can't pass a budget, but we did pass 10 bills to lower our incarceration rate. I think that they'd be, you know, pretty shocked to say what's going on down there. But among those, there were some sentencing changes. So, and they actually created another task force that's meeting now that's supposed to address sentencing. They extended parole eligibility to a larger population, including a lot of formerly children who were convicted of murder. They gave them the opportunity for parole eligibility.
Can we stop right there? That sounds like it would make people very uncomfortable. Children convicted of murder who are offered parole eligibility.
Yeah.
I mean, just right. That makes me uncomfortable. What are you talking about there? So you're 17, but you shot somebody in cold blood, so you're going to get paroled at some point. Is that the argument?
I mean, you know, a lot of times, not to say that these are all the unique crimes, but they are, you know, they are murder. But these were people at a very young age. And then when they're older, after they've served 25 years, it's about the eligibility for parole consideration. I was actually at a parole hearing last Thursday, and there was a man who'd served 49 years for a murder. And this is an old man who makes toys. He makes toys in a wood shop to give to children. I think children with no means. You know, this is someone who's a far cry. I don't know who he was 50 years ago, but this is a far cry from who he was. And the parole board said no. They denied him parole. So we have a parole board that's actually pretty, you know, they're it's not an easy pass. But when we talk about parole eligibility, it's the opportunity to plead your case before them. and to be considered for that, because there are – remember, we do lead we're the second highest rate of wrongful convictions. So it's not like we have a system that's perfect.
The Supreme Court, I think, has jumped in this recently, and they said it's cruel and unusual punishment to sentence an underage defendant for any charge to life without parole. So they've said you can't really do that. Initially, I think the idea would be you're 17, you commit a murder, and you get slapped on the wrist, and 6 months later you're out on the street, and they say, don't do that again. But in this case, what you're saying is someone's in prison for 25, 30, 35, 40 years. At that point, they may be an entirely different person. Are we, the United States, kind of alone in keeping those people in prison, you know, on and on and on and on and on?
Louisiana. We're Louisiana's alone in that.
Really?
And actually, Louisiana is one of very few states where second-degree murder is automatic life. Louisiana is a life means life state, and a lot of other places at least extend the opportunity for people to be considered for parole, whereas we don't allow that. Whereas most other states at least offer people that chance to show that they've been rehabilitated, to at least make their case. We do not.
Let's talk about rehabilitation a little bit. We noted the amazing recidivism rate and, you know, people going back to prison. We let out 95% of the people in prison will get let out, but then, you know, many of those go back. What are we doing right now for people who are let out of prison? I mean, right now, if I can get on my soapbox just a little bit, we're denying them housing, employment opportunities, right to vote, educational loans and opportunities, food stamps and other public benefits, exclusion for jury service. So how are we equipping these people to reenter society?
I will say that, and I'll just kind of loop back to some legislation that just passed. Included among that, we extended the food stamp eligibility to people convicted of drug crimes as soon as they get out, because food and shelter are two of the most immediate needs for someone who just gets out. There is also a bill that extends the opportunity for people to get licensed for professional licenses, and so people will be able to start earning money
so
on their own when they get out.
So that just passed?
That just passed.
Okay, great.
And then one of the most important parts was a bill that that required reinvestment. So if, you know, one fewer person in a prison bed saves a certain amount of money, and of that money, especially when you writ large for all the people that and this is supposed to lower our incarceration rate by about 4,000 beds. So for the money saved there, 70% of all those savings are supposed to be reinvested. And that is supposed to go into – or that will go into programming that has been proven in other states and other examples to further lower our recidivism rate. And a lot of that needs to go to reentry. And we need to have people – when people get out of prison, there needs to be a place for them to go where they can, especially be mentored by people that have been through that process and have successfully transitioned, because we don't have the best infrastructure, although we do have a remarkable number of people who, and many of them are friends of mine, who did time, and they're invited to my house. They're someone you would want to be over a guest at your home for dinner. And they do this on their own, and they need to be compensated and given more infrastructure so that they can, further help people transition successfully back into our communities.
Yeah, I understand that's one of the major issues, is that people get released from prison, but not everybody has a great home situation. So they may, in fact, often don't have a home to go to. They're left having to get on a couch, find a couch somewhere. They don't have a job. You know, there's all kinds of issues. 70% of reinvestment would seem to address at least a little bit of this. Let's talk about drugs and prison incarceration just a little bit. I noted, I think, the other day that if you're arrested for a kilogram of heroin with intent to sell, there are mandatory minimums here. I think you get 5 or 10 years, whereas in England you get 6 months. What's the story with all the drug? You know, in some states, marijuana is now legal. We still have people in prison for possession of marijuana. Some people, it's been noted in various things, because it was part of a third strike, end up in prison for life for possession of marijuana as the third strike. Is it time to relook at all that stuff, and could we look at that in Louisiana?
Yeah, I think there's – I mean, there's – I know of an example of I think there's a man, Bernard Noble, who's doing 14 years for possession of, I think, two joints. There are – and actually, he was just released. He just had a hearing, but there was also someone else that was, I think, facing double-digit years in prison for possession of marijuana. And a lot of that comes from our habitual offender statute, which is Louisiana's version of the three strikes you're out law. And that the idea behind that is that if people are continuously offending, then you know we'll sweep it under the rug. We'll just get rid of them rather than actually deal with the problem. But like a lot of drugs, that's usually a public health problem. That's someone who needs to be rehabilitated. Prison's not doing it for them. So that's a case where we're relying on prison to do that rather than investing in a program that will actually address why this person is having those issues and those yield better results than prison does.
You know what I'm thinking? This just occurred to me. It's right now we're in the midst of a well-publicized opioid epidemic, and I certainly don't want to downplay that at all. But I've noticed that the response to the opioid epidemic hasn't necessarily been lock them up, get them off the street in the way that, say, the crack epidemic was. So I'm wondering if something about treatment and a different approach to drug offenders will, in fact, kind of come along with this new drug epidemic that people aren't necessarily seeing as dangerous in the way that perhaps previous epidemics were.
Yeah, I hope so. I certainly hope so. And, maybe a lot – part of that is because – this crisis was brought on by legal companies selling prescription drugs, and it's somehow we're going to treat that differently than when it's an illegal drug. They should all be treated the same, and they should all be treated so that one, we rid as much we can the nuisance that they cause, but the drugs themselves. But it's really about just getting people opportunities so that they don't fall down like that. But
just a question. Now there's a new legislative session coming up. They can't talk about the budget in the legislative session because they're going to need a special session. So does that do you have other legislation you're going to be proposing or that's going to be brought forward with regard to criminal justice?
Yeah, last year we had the last year the Justice for Investment bills went through, and some things ended up getting chopped out, put on the cutting room floor, and we're going to try and go back and get them.
Give me an example, perhaps, of one of those. Or
I think parole eligibility. We want to. There are a lot of folks that are serving life sentences that, for crimes that in other states, they at least get the opportunity to be considered for parole. So we want to get them the chance so that they can go before a parole board, make their case, and see if they can not die in prison.
So recently, I think something like 1,900 people were the first wave of people being released that might not have been without some the governor's help and some legislation. Are you feeling optimistic about the possibilities for criminal justice reform in Louisiana?
Yeah, we got it done last year. The gang is still back together, and I think that the momentum's there. The problem hasn't gone away, so let's push ahead.
If people were to find your organization online, what would they look for?
We're on Facebook, Louisiana for Prison Alternatives, and we also have a website at prisonreformla.org.
All right. This is Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We've been talking today with John Burkhart, who is with Louisianans for Prison Alternatives. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Bayou de Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, and members.
Arriving at Radiolab, a full immersion curiosity joyride.
What?
Wow.
No.
Yes.
It was like,
your body jumps?
Jumps and jumps. It's not smooth.
It's 11 million miles an hour.
Woo-hoo! Chup, chup, chup.
Splat.
It was like,
what is wrong with you?
That's Radiolab coming up tonight at 9 on KRVS.
This is Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.